The only Buckwalter mystery that I know, and we'll get to that first and then I'll start over.
Okay.
Moody's son, Russell.
Yeah.
Was his father James Asa Fentress? Do you know?
I think you're right. Yeah. I know it was James Fentress. Yeah. That's what I understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever been able to tell me, but in doing the research,
right,
in the 1920 census, he's shown as living with Nettie Buckwalter, John A. Buckwalter,
yeah,
Anna Buckwalter,
yeah,
and his name is Russell Fentress.
Yeah, I think you're...
And then after that, his name was Buckwalter. In the 1930 census and all the records after that, he's Russell, yeah, Buckwalter.
I think you're so. Right.
Not that it matters a bit today.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Appreciate you working on the Buckwalter history. And not that it's important, but I sit here in this chair every day naming the 11 Buckwalters that I'm related to and remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I start out with, come on, Harold. I'm handicapped. It's my brain. Mary, Harvey, Mary, Harvey, Amanda, or Mary, Harvey, Maggie, Anna, Ruth, John, Alice, Irene, Ruth, my father Abram, and Neoma.
Yep.
Was a Hobbs. That's the 11. I think I've got them in the right order.
You're close. I just looked them up before I came here. I couldn't recite them now, but that sounded about right.
Yeah.
What was Grandpa Buckwalter like?
Grandpa Buckwalter, John Adam, and Grandma Anna, and I met and remember all of them, and I've probably told you this before, but almost every day I sit here remembering Grandpa Buckwalter would hold me in his lap as a preschooler down here in the home place where I was born, and rock me in his chair and sing, "What can wash away my sins? Nothing but the blood of Jesus." And there was another one. Happy. And now I forget it. But I had to think. And my life, not that it matters, but I was born down there in that house. July will be 90 years ago. And when I remember that as a little preschooler, Grandpa Buckwalter would hold me in his lap and rock me in his rocking chair and sing these two gospel songs. What can wash away my sins? Nothing but the blood of Jesus.
And then,
happy. Now I forget the other one. But, yep, I remember them very well. And remember living there. My parents were on the other side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I would slide down the banister from the second floor. And I loved it at Grandpa's house. And, yeah, Buckwalters. And
what's your first memory? Your earliest memory?
The earliest memory? Well, that would be him holding me in his lap as a preschooler and singing. There were two gospel songs, and I had to think affected my life in a very real way, I'm sure. John Adam Buckwalter. And your mother was Alice? Yeah. Aunt Alice Kiffer. Yeah. And Uncle Roy.
What was he like?
He was a good guy. Worked on the railroad, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was nothing bad about him that I can remember. No. But great.
Well, did you go to, was the Mennonite school?
Attending school?
Yeah.
My school was the first three grades were at Great Bridge Elementary in that three-story building.
Mm-hmm.
We had no Mount Pleasant Mennonite school at that time. And I was on the first, second, they started the Mount Pleasant Christian School in the old yellow store building down by the airfield. And I remember that. And almost every day I quote a scripture verse that I learned in the Mount Pleasant Christian School in the old yellow store building, Isaiah 40:31. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. And every day, I'm quoting that scripture sitting here in this chair.
Who was your teacher then?
Well, let's see. One of the first teachers was Sarah Jane Weaver. Let's see.
She married Chester Winger?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there was another one. Come on, like I say, I've got a handicap card. It's for my brain. And some of those things escape me. But, yep, the old yellow school building. And, you've probably heard this, and I'm a blabbermouth. And we were right across the road from the Mount, or the airfield.
Mm-hmm.
And we were little guys. But this you may not have heard. And on the back side of the field, they had a bombing range where they would drop smoke bombs and and the smoke would go up.
Mm-hmm.
And when they weren't flying and it was quiet over there, we would crawl under the barbed wire fence, go over there and pick up bombs that hadn't gone off. And when we finally went to Harrisonburg for the last 2 years of high school, Cletus Hobbs, Aunt Neoma's son Cletus, took a quart jar of smoke powder in a glass jar, and we had our dormitory rooms on the third floor, and after lights out and bedtime, I don't know if he did it more than once, but Cletus put a stream of smoke powder down the hall and around the corner and struck a match at his door and our hall manager, of course, could trace where it came from. I don't know what kind of punishment he got for it, but kids and
members
and yep, Buckwater history.
Was Cletus in your class?
Cletus?
Or was he older than you?
He might have been a year and a half older. His older brother, Ray, was like 4 years older.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Cletus was probably a year and a half older than I was.
Who else would have been in your class?
In her class, Mildred Miller.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Was in my class in public school and all the way through high school here and Harrisonburg. Mildred, yeah, and Daniel Winger. The three of us started out in the first grade together in public school, graduated together in high school at Harrisonburg, and and Mildred was not related to us, but she was a girl in our class from the first grade all the way through graduation at Harrisonburg. And
where did she go when she left here?
Where?
Yeah, where did she move to? Where did she live after she... Because I remember her vaguely, but not very well.
Miller. She may have stayed in Harrisonburg. I'm not sure.
When you were a boy, had they already completed the road from by the church back past Schottinger's and around the corner on up to Blue Ridge?
Yeah.
Was it dirt or was it paved?
It was paved.
Paved.
Yeah.
And I've got an old map that shows the road only goes about as far as the Schottingers. And it shows Winger Road coming about this far.
Yeah.
And this doesn't show, well, it shows Blue Ridge, of course, all down across and into Kasson Lane because the airfield isn't there. But
yeah.
So I don't know when the road that is now Maxwell Street and yeah. Bedford was actually put in.
Yeah.
How come Grandpa moved here from Pennsylvania?
I don't know. What I do know, my father was, I think, about 10 years old when they moved here from Lancaster.
Mm-hmm.
Thereabouts, and I don't, back to your question, I don't know why they moved to Virginia from Lancaster County. I think maybe there were other families moving, and I don't know which ones, but they and Grandpa Buckwalter was a carpenter, and it was before the days of electricity, power tools, but he helped to build the Mount Pleasant Church.
Mm-hmm.
And before the addition was added on, when it was just the A-frame mm-hmm. church. And now back to my boyhood and living with Grandpa and Grandma Buckwalter down here at the home place. I remember of going with Grandpa Sunday mornings through the backyard and the field behind the house and crawling under the barbed wire fence like an hour before church.
Mm-hmm.
He would go and build a fire in the coal stove. That was the heat in the church. And he would build the fire in the coal stove. And I would walk along over there with him. And then he would come back home. And church would start, and then along with my parents, we would go over to the Mount Pleasant Church for the service. And my parents had a car, but we would ride over in the car, and Grandpa would set up close to the front and at the church when we got over there, he would take a poker and stir up the coal stove in the aisle. The stove sat kind of in the aisle of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. Memories. Now that it's important, but I have lived right here. This you've probably heard. And all my life, with the exception of the 2.5 years during the Korean War, when Twyla and I were over at Williamsburg, doing our 1W service over there. But back to when my parents lived with Grandpa and Grandma Buckwalter, when they left there, they moved into a rental house up right at Cooper's Ditch on Mount Pleasant Road, just the other side of the river. And in a weatherboarded house that they rented for $6 a month. And that thing was drafty. It was built on stilts.
Yeah.
When the wind would blow, the carpet in the living room would come up off of the floor. And that's where we lived when I started in the first grade at Great Bridge Elementary in the three-story building that still stands there.
Did you have a bus or did you have to walk to school?
What's that?
Did they have a bus or did you walk to school?
A bus picked us up. And part of the story is when we lived the other side of Cooper's Ditch, there was a non-Mennonite family that lived on this side up on the hill. Let me think of her name now. Doris Locker. She was like 9 years older than our six. She was a student at Great Bridge. And I would walk across the bridge and she and I would get on board the school bus together out to Great Bridge Elementary. And the first day, she took me to my classroom. She was that familiar with the school. And she wasn't in the same grade I was, but showed me where my classroom was. And like I say, I attended over there 3 years before they opened the Mount Pleasant Christian School in the old yellow store building. I was in the fourth grade when that opened. And now I'm a blabbermouth. I could go on and on.
No, please do.
But I'm blessed to be 90 years old in July. And all of my vital signs are good. The only prescription drug I take one finasteride every day, which is for an enlarged prostate. But when it comes to blood pressure and other health problems, I give God the glory. Now, what I say, you may have heard this before, but this house was built in Grandpa Buckwalter's soybean field. This was a soybean field. For $500, Uncle Ira Miller built it. And the story on that, as it starts with that. My parents had no money, but Uncle Ira says, "That's all right, I'll go to my bank at Berkeley and borrow $500 and build the house for you." So he did, and he got over there, and the banker says, "You can't build a house for $500. But, and Uncle Ira said, "Well, if you lend me $500, I'll take you out there and show you the house." And the banker says, "Well, the bank won't let me do it. But I'll loan you $500 out of my own account." and I'll personally lend you $500. So with the $500, Uncle Ira Miller framed the A-frame of this house. It was just the four walls, and we moved in when we moved from up at Cooper's Ditch.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the first grade when we moved in, and the carpenter work that Uncle Ira Miller did on it, he framed it, he put the wooden weatherboarding on the outside, and we moved in. Had a hand pitcher pump out here in the kitchen. And when we moved in, there was no stairs upstairs. There were slats on the studs, and I slept in the south room. It had a sheet metal roof on, and my father was working on the ferries. He did all the wiring, and every payday he would bring home a couple sheets of drywall tied on top of his car, and he did the wiring, and he would put a couple sheets of drywall up, and in time, and it didn't take too long, Uncle Ira Miller came back and built the stairs that I didn't have to climb the slats. But when we first moved in, that was the story of the house. And while we lived here with my parents, they added the back porch, glassed it in, put a septic system. We had a bathroom in the house here. Got rid of the old outdoor Johnny's, and as years went by, and I don't know when, but the next improvements on the house, Eddie lived here with one of his three wives. He's with the third one and now. But he put central heat and air conditioning in. When when Twyla and I moved in, we had Window World to replace all of the windows in the house, downstairs, upstairs. And last summer, since she's gone, we had a new septic system and spread out back in the lot out back. So I sit here every day saying this house was built for $500 in Grandpa Buckwalter's soybean field, which might have been worth $50 at that time. And when current real estate values, this house and the lot of 2 acres that it sits on is probably worth $250,000.
Probably.
So the house has a story, and I'm a blabbermouth.
Well, did you graduate from the 10th grade at the Mennonite School and then go to Harrisonburg?
No, I graduated from Harrisonburg in Park View. I graduated from the Harrisonburg Mennonite from the Park View Mennonite High School, yeah. And now with my blabbermouth, one more story. Well, I'll back up. When Twyla and I married, the day we married, I was living here with my parents in this house, and it poured down rain all day. That was 1952, July the 24th, and my two wedding attendants, James Edward Rhodes, a first cousin in Harrisonburg, and he's still living and he's still up there, and Leslie Foreman was not a relative, but a lifelong friend. He lived down toward here in the general area.
Mm-hmm.
But the day we got married, it rained and poured down rain all day. And we got stuck out here in the driveway, backing out to go over to the church for the wedding. And, of course, I had a new suit and new Florsheim shoes. I couldn't get out and push the car. They got out, pushed the car out of the mud, and we went over to the church for the wedding. Now, this you've probably heard about the wedding. We had attended weddings in the conference, Newport News and Harrisonburg, where after the ceremony in the church, before we left the church, the bride and groom kissed. And so, in preparation, and we asked Amos Wanger, who was our pastor, whether we could do that. He kind of drew his frown. He says, I don't see anything wrong with that. So we were the first, Harold and Twyla were the first to kiss at their wedding. And her parents were living in at Ward's Corner in Norfolk. And she graduated from Norview High School. And we had our wedding reception in at her home. And her father was driving a Greyhound bus. And he was a professional bus driver. And he had reserved a room in the William Byrd Hotel on Broad Street in Richmond for us. And so we left the wedding reception and drove to Richmond. And on the way to Richmond, the rain changed to snow. And we got up Monday morning and walked up the sidewalk to White Tower restaurant for our breakfast. And when we got back to our room, the maid had closed the window on Twyla's orchid that she had left in the window to keep open window to keep it fresh. And for years we kept it upstairs here in a cedar chest.
Mm-hmm.
That it still may still be there. And we spent two nights in that room in the William Byrd Hotel in Richmond. And then Wednesday, we spent Monday night and Tuesday night. Wednesday, we drove to Washington and saw the White House and the Capitol building. And we were going to drive home across the Chesapeake Bay Ferry. We had no credit cards and didn't have much money. And we wanted to be sure to have enough money to pay for riding the ferry across. So Wednesday morning, we ate bananas for breakfast and rode back across the Chesapeake Bay Ferry, made it back home. And as I said, we lived here with my parents the balance of the year of 52. And the back porch, we had a temporary partition right at the door. The back porch was our kitchen. And of course, the bathroom, my parents had the bathroom in the house. And we had a bedroom upstairs in the north room. And we lived here with them until January of 53, and then went to Williamsburg during the Korean War for our 1W service. And Twyla worked in the office, and I worked in the carpenter shop, and they treated both of us extremely well. And
was that at the historic Williamsburg Historic or at the hospital?
No, we didn't work in the hospital. I did some repairs in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Twyla worked in the office, but I was in carpenter repair. And they were building a new hospital out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And they used me in the state inspector's office. And it was a very good job. And they treated me exceptionally well. And I want to back up a little bit and tell her. I was riding in the carpenter shop pickup truck from downtown out to the property that they were building the new hospital. And my carpenter foreman, William and Mary's students, were sitting on the brick wall in the Y of the street at Gloucester Avenue. And he got out and he asked them, he says, "You know the difference between William and Mary College and the Williamsburg Hospital?" They said, "No." He said, "You've got to show some improvement to get out of Eastern State Hospital." And I thought, well, that was a pretty good joke. And I still think of that. But anyway, they used me in the state inspector's office. We would take concrete samples and record them. And when they came back, they were crushed and checked to see if they were strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they put me in the building inspector's office working on that. And they treated me so well that when it came time for us to leave, they wanted me to stay on and go to William and Mary College and work on a degree of engineering and continue working with the state inspector. But we were eager to get back home, of course. And while we were in Williamsburg, Linda was born and Eddie was born.
Mm-hmm.
And friends and family had helped to frame the ranch type single story house down here at 441 Wanger Road. And when we got back and moved in there, Beverly was born in 56.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there with our three children until her father, Rudy Diller, passed away of a massive heart attack. And he's buried over here in the Mount Pleasant Church. And then we, along with friends and family, built this two-story addition with an apartment upstairs for her mother, Dorothy, to move into. And we continued living downstairs. And while we were there, and time-wise, I don't know how long it was, but we came home, I think, from Harrisonburg one time, and she had had a stroke, and I don't know who called, but she was in the hospital, and she eventually passed away, and we rented the second floor to other persons, and I don't remember now, but of course the house still stands there. And we had, time-wise, I can't give the dates, I don't know, but time-wise, Eddie and his wife moved out of this house to a job he had in North Carolina, and we moved in. And Sam and Beverly moved into the big house, and they lived there a while, and eventually, of course, they owned it, had the deed to it, and we have the deed to this one. And anyway, Sam and Beverly have sold the big house. I don't know who the family is that lives there, but musical houses, yeah.
Well, I remember when you did the addition, because I was there one day and you had a mongoose trap, and Clarence Moore came in and you were going to show him the mongoose trap. Of course, everybody else you had shown it to, when the mongoose tail flew out, they all jumped back. When it flew out in Clarence's face, he never moved a muscle.
Yeah. Yep. But I've said it at least once, I may have said it a couple of times, I repeat it many times every day. For an old man, if I make it till July, will be 90. I'm blessed with remarkably good health. And of course, no longer have a car or a driver's license. I have a identification card from Division of Motor Vehicles. When I need to give proof of who I am, I have that. But I have no driver's license to drive. But the family takes me wherever I need to go. And I'm blessed. I really have need of nothing. And this is premature, and only in the last probably week have I heard it. Eddie and his third wife, Robin, live in Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up there with her several nights a week. And he told me of course they needed my permission because I have the deed to this property. They would like to, and I said, I think it's good, buy this house and property, build a couple rooms on the back, a new bathroom, and I forget what the mm-hmm. other room is. And Robin moved here from Franklin, and it wouldn't be going back and forth to Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And she has worked in a nursing home and has experience. And at my age, and I don't drive, they would mm-hmm. both be here and live here with me. And I'm expecting that to happen this year. I don't know when this year.
Sounds like a good idea.
But I think it's wonderful. And so, Buckwalter history.
How did you meet Twyla?
Through what?
How did you meet Twyla? Where did you meet Twyla?
Okay. You got to hear that too. 70 years ago, she walked in this door at the side porch. Her family, Dorothy and Rudy Diller, had moved from Harrisonburg. His Greyhound bus driving job brought them to Norfolk. And our parents knew each other in Harrisonburg, Roberta Buckwalter and Dorothy Diller. And on a sunny Sunday afternoon, they were attending church. They walked in that side door before my sister Shirley was even born. We were probably 13 years old,
or I was,
and my sister Shirley wasn't even born, and I didn't know what to do. I'd never had a girlfriend, and when I saw Twyla, I got up and walked out, and all I knew to do was get out. And from that day, she was on my heart until right now. And the rest of that story, when I went to Harrisonburg for my last 2 years of high school, I roomed with the Huntsberger twins, Donald and Ronald Huntsberger in a triple-deck bunk. And I slept on the top bunk, and I wrote Twyla's name in fluorescent paint on the ceiling. And we had to have lights out at 10 o'clock. And when we turned the lights out, I went to sleep every night looking at Twyla. And we both graduated in 49. I graduated from Harrisonburg Mennonite High School. She graduated from Norview. And when I came back home and was attending church over at Mount Pleasant, I decided on Sunday morning I was going to ask Twyla for a date.
You mean you had her name written on the ceiling and hadn't even had a date yet?
No, no, no. Don't know that we'd even talked to each other. And when I went out from church, they always parked back by the cemetery. She was standing there with an older guy that I had never seen. I didn't know who he was, and thought, that's all right, I'm going to ask her anyway. I learned later he was a cousin of hers, had driven a truck down from Harrisonburg and came along to church with him. And I went and asked her whether I could pick her up on Thursday evening and bring her out to Young People's Literary Society up here at the school. The school was there. And she said yes. So I had never been to her house. And she gave me the house number 8041 East Glen Road in Monticello Village at Ward's Corner. And so I drove, I had my first car had belonged to Vernon Miller. It was a 48 Ford. But anyway, when I rang the doorbell, a stranger I'd never seen came to the door. And I had seen all her family. And I asked him, I said, is this 8041 East Glen Road? He said, no, this is West Glen Road. If you continue on around the circle, East Glen is on the other side of the circle. So I did, and that was our first date. And I picked her up there. And we dated for 2.5 years, and practically every date we would eat supper out on Monticello Avenue at, oh come on, it was a barbecue restaurant. We'd go out there and get a barbecue and a limeade. And
do Mars?
What's that?
Was it Dumars? Dumars is famous for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're right. It was at Dumars. We would eat at Dumars. And Twyla and I dated for 2.5 years, learning to know each other. And you've heard about our wedding day and the rain and the snow and the yakety 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 yak. I'm a yakety yak guy.
Good.
Now, leaving Twyla and I, but back, well, yes, back to Twyla and I. That clock in the corner, I don't know how many years ago I bought that as a kit and put it together and stained and varnished it. And when gave it to my parents for Christmas one year,
mm-hmm.
and when my father passed away and mother went to Parkview Mennonite Retirement Village, the clock went with her and it was up there. And when she passed away and her things were brought down here, the clock came along, and the clock sits there and is still ticking. Every morning when I get up, that's where my day begins. I go over and wind the clock. Never have used the chimes, the bells,
mm-hmm.
but. And I don't know who will get the clock when I'm gone. But. The blabbermouth has sat here and blabbered for an hour, giving you Buckwalter history.
Well, I need a little bit more. Do you know what church Grandpa Buckwalter belonged to in Pennsylvania?
No, I really don't. I'm sure it was Mennonite, but I don't know which one. I really don't.
Would it have been the Eby's that he moved here with? I went to Boron, Ohio, to the Amish Mennonite Museum, and spent a day there just copying or downloading stuff from the budget.
Yeah.
And there's so much stuff I couldn't possibly get it all, so met the director there, and now he's doing it for me and sending me everything from Kempsville and Mount Pleasant that appeared in the budget.
Yeah.
And I've downloaded everything from the Gospel Herald and the, what came before that, the Herald of Truth. There are some articles on the budget. And there was one about Grandpa Buckwalter from his, I need to go back and see where it is, but from his home congregation making the announcement in the budget that he and, I think it was Jonathan Eby, were moving to Fentress, where Eby's brother was already here. And they were sad to see them go.
Well, I don't know. As I said earlier, I believe they moved to Mount Pleasant, Virginia, because other Mennonites were moving from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And
there does seem to be a connection between most of the people that moved here and somebody else. For instance, and I've been doing Robert Mast's book out, referring to it, that in the Virginia history and the Franconia history and the Lancaster County history and the Northeast Pennsylvania history, yeah. Just you get a little tidbit here and a little tidbit there, but
yeah.
Even the Swartzes, I believe the Clendennings were friends of the Swartzes and came about the same time, even though they didn't wind up in the Mennonite Church.
Yeah.
Because they were both from the Michigan area, St. Louis, Michigan, and moved close to each other. And there was, in the budget, there's a lot of back and forth between the Swartzes and the Clendennings.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't help you with that.
Well, when you get out of one buggy service, what did you do for work then?
Well, I had been a bricklayer, and before I went into 1W.
Where did you learn that trade?
The Kramers, yeah.
Okay, would that have been Levi?
Yeah. Yep. And there was a non-Mennonite guy that he and I started. We were good friends. And he and I laid brick together.
What was his name?
I'm trying to think now. Jim. James. Jamie. Jim. Come on, Harold. Milligan.
Okay.
James Milligan. And we were working together after 1W service when I really gave my life to the Lord. And he and I were building a chimney on a house. And I don't remember exactly where that was. When he could tell there's a big difference in me. And he asked me, he says, I want to know what's happened to you. You're not the same. And I told him how I had just surrendered my life to Jesus and was living for him. And he stuck his trowel in the mortarboard and listened. And then tears ran down his cheeks. And he said, I wish I could do that, but I'm not quite ready. And, yep. Jim Milligan, and he and I kept in touch through the years. He passed away, and I forget his wife's name, but anyway, yep, the journey. And you've probably heard this, but with my yakety yaks, part of my life story. I was born down here in Grandpa Buckwalter's house. And the day I was born, I had a first cousin 9 years older than I was. Come on now. Her name was
would have been a, was she a Buckwalter?
She was a Buckwalter cousin. And 9 years younger. Or older. She was 9 years old. And when they brought me in and showed, I was born on her birthday. We had the same birthday.
Mm-hmm.
July 18th. She cried because she couldn't have me. She thought I was her birthday gift. Anyway.
How did your parents meet? How did Abe and Roberta meet?
How did our parents meet?
Yeah.
my mother was born in Harrisonburg, and every summer in Harrisonburg, Mennonite preacher would bring students down to work in the grape vineyard.
That would have been A.D. Winger?
Yeah, A.D. Winger would bring. And the Buchwalders were living at the back of the vineyard
in
the old house that stood back there. And the Buchwalders were living back there in the old two-story house. And that's how my parents met. And my mother worked down here the first summer. And then struck up an acquaintance, and my father went to Harrisonburg that fall and attended a short-term Bible school up there. And she came back down the second year. And while they were down here, they were engaged to be married at Mount Pleasant. And Amos Winger married them, and I gave you that story, that they were the first to kiss at the wedding. But they met down here in the Amos Winger vineyard, and dated for 2 years before they were married. And yep.
Well, I've got enough to work on for a while.
Well, I've said it before, but I've been blessed with a long, healthy life and have wonderful memories of a wonderful family, a wonderful church, and a wonderful family that includes you.
You've got a big family.
And Kelly. Yeah.
When we did the chorus, I worked at the chorus and figured, in fact, I talked to Stanley, our cousin Stanley, a couple weeks ago, and picked his mind for what he could remember. And he made the statement that he had heard the story, whether it was true or not, that Grandpa Buchwalder's knees had calluses on them because he spent so much time in prayer for his family. And he said, I don't know if that's true or not. I said, but when you look at the family and how many of them have become ministers and how many still retain the faith, that you almost have to believe there's something to that.
Yeah. Now with my blabber mouth, I've got two ship stories to tell you. In the first year of my ship ministry, boarded a ship from Japan, the trying to think of the ship's name. Maru. And the captain, and of course I told him I was a harbor chaplain, and he took me up to the navigation room. And back in the navigation room, he showed me a Shinto shrine. And he said, this is the Japanese god. He gives us a safe voyage. And they took their load of coal to Japan, offloaded it, then to Australia to load iron ore. And on their return from Australia to Japan in a typhoon, the ship broke up and sank. And there were only two survivors. One was a first engineer and the other an unlicensed crew member.
Mm-hmm.
But it reminded me that his god, the Shinto shrine, did not really give him a safe voyage. My other ship story, the last year, a ship I boarded, I always go to the office and I asked the chief officer, I said, what is your country? He frowned and said, it doesn't matter. He walked out, and when he came back with my cup of coffee, he said, why did you ask me, what is your country? I said, well, I have friends from a lot of countries. And I said, I just might know somebody. He said, do you know anybody from Albania? And I said, yeah. I said, I know Dini Shahini. And he did kind of a double take. You know Dini Shahini? I said, yeah. He said, he graduated with my sister. I said, do you know he lives in Norfolk? No. I said, do you want to talk to him? I had my cell phone. And Dini was working at
CBN?
Regent University.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I picked up the phone and I called Dini and I told him I'm on a ship and a friend that graduated with your sister is here. Would you like to talk to him? And then I told Dini, I said, if you'll meet me at Farm Fresh at Ward's Corner, I'll take you on board the ship and leave you there while I board some other ships. And I did. And Dini tells me that friend that graduated with his sister has passed away since then. But that's two ship stories. The first year, the ship that broke up and all died but two members. And the last year, Dini's friend, and.
Mm-hmm.
So yakety yakety yak. Did you
know Huston Thomas? Ruth's husband?
Did I know who?
Huston Thomas? Or Huston Thomas, that would pronounce it. Ruth Thomas's husband?
Huston,
okay.
Huston Thomas.
Was he killed in a hunting accident?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Thomas is still living. And I didn't know how his wife died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, You learned one thing on the Yakety Yak.
No, I learned more than that.
Oh.